from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to the Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting Summer at the Palladium now through August.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about the upcoming season for the Gregory Hancock Dance Theater.
I'll get a preview of this year's Indie Jazz Fest.
And I'll chat with community artist entrepreneur Jim Walker. And of course we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Gregory Hancock Dance Theater has a long and rich history of presenting innovative contemporary dance, often with a narrative. This season, GHDT opens a new chapter with its debut season as a resident company at the Tarkington at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. Travis DiNicola spoke with both Gregory Hancock and guest choreographer and teacher Sumit Nagdev from India.
This is kind of cool because, Gregory, I mean, you've been on the show many times. And, in fact, recently we were just talking about the Indian influence in your work. And I knew that you had been working with a company in India, in Mumbai. And now we have the opportunity to actually hear it from the source. So,
right.
Sumit, welcome to Indianapolis. And we want to hear all the dirt on Gregory.
right away.
Unfortunately, I have only good things to talk about. So
excellent.
So I am not disappointing all the fans of Gregory in Indianapolis. So in Gregory first came to India 2 years back, and we met. He just came into the studio to just inquire what kind of modern dance is happening, and we kind of hit it off from there. And mm-hmm. I asked him whether he would like to take a one-off workshop. He did it. We became great friends. And then last year, I was at the ADF, American Dance Festival, as an international choreographer in residence, and he said, I must visit GHDT, mm-hmm. to which I said, of course, why not? And then I visited GHDT, and this year again, I called him for about 2 weeks, no, 3 weeks actually, and he did Shattered, which is new production with my company first. So mm-hmm. Shattered was first premiered in Mumbai,
okay.
not in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And then now he... Also, he taught Shattered to G2,
mm-hmm.
and I'm here to teach G2 now, which
Excellent.
Is great, which is like a perfect exchange that we are having right now.
And G2 is sort of the apprentice company, the
right,
younger company
right.
for Gregory
mm-hmm.
Hancock. Sumit, tell me about your company mm-hmm. in Mumbai. I mean, the size of it, the name of it, sort of the basics. I'd like
yeah.
to get a sense of mm-hmm. what that's like.
Mm-hmm. So the name of the company is Expressions Modern Dance Company.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I named it Expressions is because we have a lot of expressions of Indian dance cultures. Like, I am trained in Bharatanatyam, Chao, a little bit of ballet and release technique.
Mm-hmm.
So I collaborate and amalgamate all these things and come up with my own vocabulary and repertoire.
Which sounds a lot like Gregory, actually.
Right.
Yes.
Huh,
yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
interesting.
I see where this is going.
Whereas Gregory also... you know, involves ballet technique a lot, mm-hmm. you know, because in America, everybody does ballet.
Mm-hmm.
But in India, everybody does Bharatanatyam or Kathak, for that matter.
And that's a traditional Indian style?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's like how ballet is done in schools here.
Mm-hmm.
Bharatanatyam and Kathak is done in schools. There is no mm-hmm. ballet school in India.
Okay.
Maybe there are classes,
mm-hmm.
you know, like how you have Bharatanatyam classes here, but not a school of Bharatanatyam here.
Okay.
It's the same way there is a school of Bharatanatyam, but there is no school of ballet.
Got it.
So that's why our collaboration really works.
Yeah.
Because we have the perfect exchange. Right now when I'm working with G2, I'm working with things that he's taught them, like he must have taught them base A and base B,
mm-hmm.
and I'm moving on to C,
mm-hmm.
you know. Whereas when he came to India and worked with my company, I mean, they don't know much about ballet, and he taught them A, B, C, D, E, which was quite a lot. And mm-hmm. I think he did... a lot of work in 3 weeks. Maybe none of us expected him to do so much. And I mean, I knew he is a superpower here, but I could actually get the sense of it when he was there.
Yeah.
And right now I'm here trying to do similar things, but I know I won't get there. Well, but I'm trying.
That I find really interesting with Gregory's work is the way that he tells stories in his pieces. I mean, yes. In very much of a ballet tradition, mm-hmm. even though the movement isn't always necessarily traditional ballet. It's as you said, it's sort of a mix of many different styles mm-hmm. coming together. With your company, with Expressions, is that also the case? I mean, is storytelling a big part of your dance, or is it more mm-hmm. abstracted?
So there is storytelling, but it's abstract storytelling in my dancing. For example, my last production was called Skin Trade, because in India we have a lot of child sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. So my piece was based on that. And I mean, obviously there was a story that there is so much of child sexual abuse in the country, but it was kind of abstract and for the audience to understand and take back.
Not as much of a narrative.
Not as much of a narrative. But okay. Whereas I feel, I mean, though you said that Gregory's work is narrative and it's mm-hmm. storytelling, though I feel some of it is abstract mm-hmm. even. So that way we are kind of similar. Whereas I do more of abstract work now, mm-hmm. you know, at this moment. Currently, I'm working on more abstract things, whereas I think Gregory currently is working on more storytelling things, and he used to do a lot of abstract. And maybe next year I will do more storytelling. Mm-hmm. So it's just phases. I think all choreographers and artists go through phases and sure. thought processes. So currently that's my phase, and currently that's his phase. So it's kind of fun.
Gregory, this must be just a great fun opportunity for you. I mean, to be able to work with Samit and collaborate in this way. And again, this is the second summer that he's been here working with your dancers. Tell me, how do your dancers respond to this?
Oh, it's really exciting for them, because like you talked about, you know, we've had an Indian connection for quite a long time, and this is just enhancing that. And it's a great opportunity for the dancers to get some different styles of movement, some different ideas about movement. Mm-hmm. They really enjoy it. Right now, Samit is working with our workshops and some of the younger students and everything. And then in a couple mm-hmm. weeks later, he'll be working with the company as well. And that'll be really great for them and great for Samit as well.
I'm
and
excited.
One of the dancers from Samit's company, Deshank, is also here with us this summer training and learning a lot. So I think it's a really great exchange and collaboration between all of us. It's really beneficial for everybody.
What about for you in terms of how does it affect your choreography? I mean, you're obviously able to incorporate maybe movements that your dancers didn't know before, but maybe even on a grander scale, does it sort of change the way you approach the work?
It expands things. You know, it's just finding more knowledge, and the more, you know, I visit India, the more I learn about Samit's culture, about Samit's company, that obviously influences my dance and my work, even, you know, subconsciously sometimes. You're not even realizing that, but that's what dance is all about, kind of evolving and continuing to bring new elements to dance and explore new things and keep it changing and keep it interesting for the dancers as well as me.
Well, it sounds like just a fantastic opportunity
for
everyone.
It's really interesting. I mean, we have this very kind of kismet, you know, relationship that was right away. I mean, just our souls kind of meshed together. And, you know, sometimes that's a little strange sounding, but it's really true. And, you know, I'm very comfortable with his dancers. And, you know, we had great emotional relationships right away, and I hope Samit feels the same about our dancers as well. And
of course, when Gregory was in India, I mean, he was a part of my family, and and our company anyways runs like a family, just the way GHDT works. And whenever I am here, you know, everybody's taking opportunities to cook for me and do things for me, so it makes me feel like home.
Sure.
So I don't feel I'm away from home or anything like that. I feel I'm at home.
A great exchange program.
Right.
And this is a nice way for you, Gregory, to, I'm sure, wrap up your season. You're traditionally the Gregory Hancock Dance Theater season sort of ends at the end of the summer, and then I know you've announced the next season, which kicks off in October, and we'll sort of go through that just briefly in a moment. But tell me about the last piece at the end of the summer, because I'm really curious about this, especially just because Samit's wearing like one of the coolest T-shirts I've ever seen. That's a Gregory Hancock Dance Theater T-shirt, but it's got all these gears on it and watch pieces. So what connection does that have to do with your dance?
Well, that has to do with a new piece that we're working on, that we'll be working on in a couple weeks, called The Story of Pinocchio, but more the original Italian author Collodi version instead of the Disney version, which is a little darker, a little more cautionary tale. But then, you know, I like to take stories and transport them to a new time period or a new place, whatever, to change them a little bit. So I chose kind of a steampunk theme for this, which is kind of Victorian Edwardian meets sci-fi.
Well, I mean, Pinocchio is kind of a Frankenstein story in a way.
It is a little bit. Yeah. And we're loose with the gears on Sumit's shirt that the listeners can't see right now. But
I can see, and it's awesome.
Yes, and it's a little more about, a little more robotic maybe, and more, you know, metal kind of puppets and things instead of the traditional marionette wooden carved puppets. So it's a little different, a little darker, and a little, you know, what happens to bad little boys.
And that's going to be at Pike, is that right?
At Pike, and it'll be our last concert there for a while. The holiday production of the Nutcracker will remain at Pike throughout the seasons, but...
So, but Happily Ever After, is that the right title?
Yes, that's it.
So that's August 12th and 13th. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious, what sort of music are you using for this?
For Pinocchio, we're using a lot of kind of electronic music.
Yeah.
Very some strange music a little bit. There's also a couple other pieces in the concert. One is called Once Upon a Time, kind of fractured fairy tales. Mm-hmm. There's a narcoleptic Sleeping Beauty. Cinderella is nearsighted and falls in love with the wolf instead of the prince. And that has some more classical music, and it's very charming piece. And also Hansel and Gretel is in the concert as well. With classical music as well. Yeah. So this electronic music and the steampunk image was a nice juxtaposition of styles and everything. So I think it'll be really interesting for the audience.
That sounds really cool.
Thanks.
I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So give me a preview of the rest of your season, because your new season for 2011-2012 kicks off in October.
In October with a program called My Gypsy Soul, which, you know, dancers are kind of known as gypsies sometimes anyway, and we're traveling to a new home at the Tarkington Theater at the Center
Up
for Performing Arts, which we're excited about. And so we thought that was a really nice way to introduce new audiences to the company. My Gypsy Soul is a really exciting program that is, it has a narrative that runs through the piece, kind of about follows the Roma from India through all the way to Spain and Portugal, going through the Balkans, through Eastern Europe and everything, and all the music that came along with that and the blending of cultures. And so, again, kind of a perfect piece for my company to blend all these different cultures. There's Indian music and African music and Russian and Serbian and Yugoslavian and Greek and Irish and Spanish and Portuguese.
How fun.
So it's a really, really colorful, fun concert. So that'll be in October.
Okay.
A band of gypsies moving into the Tarkington.
Now, do you have someone like finding music for you? You just spend a lot of time like searching for
I spend
for
so
pieces.
Much time like looking for music. And I like to think that we find some of the most beautiful and interesting music too.
Mm-hmm.
But I do spend a lot of time, and because of my interest in other cultures and, you know, there's a world of music out there.
I'm sure the internet certainly makes it easier.
Oh, it does. Yeah. It does. But we get sometimes, I think, so stuck on styles that we're comfortable with. So I like to keep moving out of my comfort zone a little bit and exploring new kinds of music. And
very cool.
That's what this concert does.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. And then you mentioned Nutcracker already, and so you are bringing that back to Pike.
We'll bring that back. That's kind of a popular annual production. And again, it's a little different for us. It's not the Tchaikovsky score.
Mm-hmm.
It's a contemporary version of the Nutcracker. It follows a similar storyline, but a little bit different. You know, Clara's an orphan girl on the streets, and she's given a gift of a broken Nutcracker by a homeless man, and so it just sort of changes the story a little bit and makes it a little more contemporary. So it's a really popular holiday production.
Cool. And then All Greek to Me?
It's All Greek to Me is our annual cabaret-style concert, which our audiences love.
Yes.
That up-close-and-personal thing where the audience can experience dance in a new way, really seeing the physicality of dance, everything that goes behind it. It's nice, too, for the dancers and myself to be able to interact with audiences in a more personal way, too, where you don't have that barrier.
Right, because you're actually, I mean, you set up sort of cabaret-style tables, and the dancers are moving in and within that space.
Right, and you know, 3 feet away from people, too, which just comes on frightening for the dancers, too, to see the audience member that close. But this year it's a Greek theme, so we'll have some baklava and pita and hummus and stuff along with some great dancing and some Greek mythology pieces, the Big Fat Greek Wedding piece, kind of a spoof of that movie from several years ago. So, you know, we try to make that concert a really fun concert every year.
Sure.
So the audience can just enjoy dance.
Very cool. And you're bringing back Superhero.
We're bringing X Superhero in mm-hmm. April, again at the Tarkington. Mm-hmm. Kind of one of the company's signature pieces, contemporary.
But it'll be first time at the Tarkington. Restaged?
Slightly restaged. Well, the thing, you know, interesting about repertoire, too, is you bring back pieces, but different dancers are dancing different roles. So mm-hmm. it always brings freshness and newness to the mm-hmm. role and to the piece.
And Superhero is, the subtitle is The Story of a Man Called Jesus.
Right, and mm-hmm. it's a contemporary retelling of the last week in the life of Jesus, kind of the women around him and his relationship with Judas. Mm-hmm. Very beautiful piece, emotional piece, but uplifting too. It doesn't end with the crucifixion. It goes mm-hmm. through the resurrection, so okay. it ends hopeful.
Travis DiNicola with Gregory Hancock and Sumit Nagdev from the Gregory Hancock Dance Theater. For more information on their season, visit GregoryHancockDanceTheater.org, and they spell theater T-H-E-A-T-R-E, so GregoryHancockDanceTheater.org. The next performance is Happily Ever After on August 12th and 13th at the Pike Performing Arts Center. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Indie Jazz Fest is back and opening on Sunday, September 11th, and continuing over a seven-day period in multiple venues, including the Jazz Kitchen, Madam Walker Theater, the Cabaret at the Columbia Club, and many others. The grand finale is on Saturday, September 17th, on the grounds of the Opta Park and the Indianapolis Arts Center in Broad Ripple. Sharon invited Jazz Fest impresarios Dave Ali of the Jazz Kitchen and saxophonist Rob Dixon of Owl Studios to tell us more about the events.
Neither of you intended to be in the business of putting on a jazz festival, but you took it over. You jumped in there when there was a need. What have you learned so far? Give me kind of the bullet points of the best things you've learned about what you need to do to put on a successful jazz fest. Rob?
Well, you know, initially going into it, I think you think that the hard work is going to actually be during the festival or the week of the festival or a couple weeks prior, but you find out that you know, there's so much hard work done, you know, 6, 8 months, 10 months before the festival, and you have to work. It's definitely a year-round effort. So that was very apparent to us our first year with going out with development and meeting folks and trying to make connections and all of that. It's definitely a full-time job. So that was, an eye-opening experience for me. I mean, we were told always that it was going to be, you know, you're going to have to start working on this thing a year in advance. And literally, you have to start working on it a year in advance. So you don't get much time to downtime when you're doing a festival.
Dave, you've been in the business of promoting jazz and specifically promoting Indianapolis's jazz profile for a long time. Do you find out that when you go to approach artists to book them for Indie Jazz Fest that they already know what a great town this is for this kind of music?
Yeah, I mean, our legacy for this music, for jazz music, is equal to pretty much any city in the world. I mean, you know, we make comparisons even to New Orleans. Maybe we don't have the depth, but certainly the Wes Montgomerys and the Freddie Hubbards and the J.J. Johnsons and the Slide Hamptons are on par with anybody out there. I'm not sure that it's as much of a decision-making process for the artists to come here, but certainly they're excited that they know that this is a jazz town, a town that's appreciative of this music, and I think that goes a long way you'll find that the artists give a more convincing concert. You know, they pour their heart out just a little bit more if they feel like the support is there and they feel like the crowd's behind them, and certainly that happens here.
Sure, assuming that the money's equal, they would probably go any place somebody would book them, but yeah, it's nice to know.
They do like a check, too, yes.
Yeah. So. But it's nice to know that they know that there's a fan base here.
Yeah, most definitely.
Part of your mission of Indie Jazz Fest is not just putting on this once-a-year event. Not only are you, as Rob said, working behind the scenes year-round to raise the money and raise the profile, but you're also doing a lot of educational work year-round, and part of why you have several venues that are even more widespread than usual this year has to do with the educational piece of your mission, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Our educational efforts focus primarily with the city of Indianapolis, and we've dealt with, since we've started, this organization started working on Indie Jazz Fest. We've dealt with IPS and Keith White, who's the director of fine art for IPS. And we've had a lot of successful ventures with him, reinstituting the IPS All City Jazz Band, as well as a number of concerts that we've done for just general assembly audiences for IPS students, getting them interested in music and jazz, and workshops that we've had just recently for all IPS music students at Short Ridge School. So we're very excited, and we have some other things that are planned that are going to coincide with their year-round schedule. So we're excited about that as well.
Is jazz part of the music curriculum in IPS?
Most schools, most of the high schools have a jazz band, mm-hmm. you know. So we would like to help strengthen that by, you know, having a lot of artists, professional artists, local, regionally, and nationally, come in and work with the students. And we just started to do this summer what we call a jam clinic series, where we have professional musicians play for the students at the Jazz Kitchen, maybe for a couple songs, and then we have an open jam session, and that is open to all students in the Indianapolis area. And our first one, we had a huge turnout, so we know that there's a huge interest in the city of Indianapolis for kids to get more knowledge and aspects of jazz. So we thought it was important that we do something like this.
Absolutely. When you're working with kids, when you're going in and playing for kids who aren't already playing in the jazz band, for example, at their school, what do they know or not know about jazz? What do they ask you? Who are some of the artists that might be entry points that they know a little bit about, or what is their way in? Is there any kind of pattern that's emerging?
I wouldn't really say that there's a specific pattern of what students know and do not know. Most students have a general knowledge of improvisation, but like most of the students don't have an extended knowledge of chords, and I think their entryway is learning specific tunes, you know, and hearing specific recordings. So I guess there is sort of a pattern. I mean, most of the students do know the record Kind of Blue. I think that's in a very important record, Miles Davis Kind of Blue. It's the beginning of modal music, and that's a great way to start, you know. And that was all my teachers, I think probably David's teachers, everybody said, you got to check out this recording. You know, it helps you get at least a cursory knowledge of playing a melody and improvising over a particular change. So students are aware of that. And I think with the Jamie Ebersole play-alongs, students have become actually even more aware of standards and important jazz selections.
So there's Indy Jazz Fest is essentially a week of events that go on throughout the city. But let's talk about kind of the crown jewel, the big concert on Saturday. How do you go about deciding what artists to book?
Well, I mean, it's a kind of a blend. It was interesting. I was reading an article about I think it's Montreal or Ottawa Jazz Festival, and how they're balanced between getting crowds there and booking artists that you would say, quote unquote, called jazz, and then, you know, kind of towing that line or making that balance. But it's pretty easy with our festival. I mean, everybody, you know, from George Benson to Trombone Shorty, I feel like has their foot pretty well in jazz. You know, we obviously the first year we did it in 2009. Sorry, I'm backtracking a little bit, but the first year in 2009, we felt like we had a really strong lineup, and I, you know, I think for most jazz fans, they would have agreed with that. I mean, there was Branford Marcellus and Pancho Sanchez and a lot of other luminaries, but there's a certain artist that kind of goes past the jazz audience, and that's why last year we decided to bring in Al Jarreau. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of following suit with that. You know, we're saying, hey, you know, George Benson's our big headliner this year. Obviously, everybody knows George Benson. So it's a way for us to kind of reel folks in, if you will, and kind of, you know, we can introduce them to somebody like a Rufus Reed or a Mel Rhine or something by kind of getting their foot in the door. And then they'll be around. They'll check out these great groups that are, I think, equally as entertaining. But just have a little different style of music that they perform. But we also know that Indianapolis is a big smooth jazz town, and so Spyro Gyra and the Yellow Jackets, even though I wouldn't consider them 100% smooth jazz, they got played on a lot of smooth jazz radio, and I think there's a good knowledge of who they are, and they're really solid musically, solid groups. So we feel, you know, it kind of, I think it satisfies both the jazz purist and the casual listener at the same time. So that's kind of the formula that we took this year to try to balance the.
I'm thinking that it does sound like there's a little bit of a formula. You want to make sure you've got smooth jazz, maybe something Latin influenced. Mm-hmm. What else is popular here?
Well, I think that one thing that probably we don't have a lot of is the female vocalists. Unfortunately, female vocalists are really unknown or really expensive. So it just by the time we got through with some budget
middle.
Constraints, it was hard. But that's where the weekday concerts come in. Like last year, we had Dee Dee Bridgewater on our Friday concert at the Madam Walker. Well, maybe we didn't have as much of the female vocalist on. We did have one, but we didn't have it as much of a prominence on the Saturday concert. But throughout the week, you still have an opportunity as a fan to go check out some great jazz vocals. So.
Mm-hmm. Other styles, is there much of a following for like 20s Preservation Hall jazz band kind of, and help me with a better
term. Trad, Dixieland.
Yeah, Dixieland, that's what I'm looking for.
There is some following. It's probably, unfortunately it's an older genre, so it kind of follows the demographics a little bit, But yeah, I think there's still interest out there for it, and like last year, Preservation Hall was one of the featured performers last year. We're working with a group right now, Sunset Stomp, it's more of a traditional group that's going to be kind of roaming the grounds of the Jazz Fest. It's not really on a stage, but just to kind of give people a taste of what that music was. So,
if I want both of you to address this, what's the best way if somebody kind of likes jazz but they don't know a lot about it yet? In addition to coming to Jazz Fest, where would you send them to learn? Is there a book that you would say, oh my gosh, this is kind of the Bible, this should be on the bookshelf of everybody who loves jazz? Or would you just say, go plug the artists you love already into Pandora and let that be your guide? Or what do you do when somebody is like, oh, I'm putting my toe in the water, but I'm not an expert yet, help?
Well, I'd say listening is the most important part. You know, I think you can read it in a book, and it's great to have that background, which sometimes gets people interested in what's going on. But, like you said, that Kind of Blue album, if you listen to that and you don't kind of get something, then you don't want to take it any farther.
Then it's probably not your kind of music.
But jazz is such a huge umbrella. I mean, it's got a little something, like we said, we've got smooth jazz, we've got contemporary jazz, we've got, you'll get soul jazz, something funkier, trad, Dixieland, big band. So, it's usually got a little something for everybody. People that come to me at the club and say, I'd bring my wife, but she hates jazz. And I go, no, she just doesn't. She hasn't heard the right artist yet to be able to fully appreciate it. Because, without getting into too much of a discussion, it's influenced almost every art form since then. So if you like rock and roll, there's a lot of jazz in there. There's obviously the blues elements that help jazz, and then jazz took another step. I mean, the big band sounds, some of the modern day kind of crooners, if you will.
The Harry Connicks.
The Harry Connicks and the Jamie Cullums. They are all influenced. Michael Bublé, they're
sure.
All essentially jazz influenced artists. So,
right.
You can't escape jazz.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, to add what David's saying, listening is everything. But I'd suggest to people to listen to some jazz recordings, something like Miles Davis or John Coltrane. And then number two, go see a live jazz performance, because I know so many times I've actually played in a club and people say, I don't really like jazz, but I love your music. And I'm like, well, it's jazz.
Then you like jazz.
Then you like jazz. And yeah, these days people, a lot of times they listen with their eyes, hence the, $2 million production on a Beyonce show, because they know people are very visually, oriented. With their entertainment. So I tell people, go watch a jazz performance, and you get to see, observe, some of the way musicians communicate, because That's all. That's what jazz is really about, particularly when a group plays, is the way they communicate with each other. When one's soloing, the way the other supports, or how they're going to go into a song or come out of a song. I think people would be surprised. I just don't think a lot of people, they just turn it off immediately because they didn't hear it growing up. They didn't learn about it. They have no knowledge of it. So you're like, well, I don't know. I don't want to check it out. Go see a jazz performance. I guarantee you will like jazz if you go see a jazz performance. Hopefully it'll be a good jazz performance. But even if it's okay, you'll probably end up liking it.
Sharon Gamble with Dave Ali of the Jazz Kitchen and saxophonist Rob Dixon of Owl Studios. Indie Jazz Fest takes place on Sunday, September 11th through Saturday, September 17th, with the grand finale on Saturday at Opti Park and the Indianapolis Arts Center in Broderpool. Find out lots more about ticket deals, individual concerts, educational outreach, and opportunities to volunteer at IndieJazzFest.net.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
We've just been hearing about the Indie Jazz Fest, which is coming up this fall, but there's so much still to do this summer that we wanted to take a couple minutes to tell people about it on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
What do you got?
Well, I've got a concert coming up at the Ellenberger Park on July 19th. It's the annual Indianapolis Symphony and Community Hospital East free concert that they do. This year, they're featuring Tchaikovsky and Dvorak and lots of other great stuff, and this is going to be on Tuesday the 19th at 7:30 at Ellenberger Park. That's part of the Irvington neighborhood, and very, very cool. Looking forward to this free concert.
Take your bug spray. Isis of Indiana, that cool collaborative of women jazz artists, is celebrating many styles of Latin American music history and culture on Friday night, July 29th, one night only, 8 o'clock, Cabaret at the Columbia Club. You will hear singers Stacy Sandoval and Elizabeth Sousa and world-renowned dancer Ana Lucia Cavalcante. You won't so much hear her as see her. But check that out. More info at thecabaret.org. That's July 29th, Friday night, 8 o'clock.
What is one part brassy musical, one part sultry Elvis? Well, it's Dance Kaleidoscope's summer hot concert that is maybe a diversion from the summer heat. It's called Summer Musicals Elvis Sizzle, and it is taking place July 21st through the 24th at the One America stage at the IRT. And what's super awesome about this for DK doing this summer program, all tickets are $10. So
wonderful.
It's a perfect time to go check out Dance Kaleidoscope.
Love it. You're never too old for the fairy tale Cinderella, and the Rickswile Theater Company is producing Cinderella right now at the Rick Center for the Arts. That's at 122 West Main Street in Greenfield. It's a timeless Rodgers and Hammerstein classic musical. It truly is family friendly, and you can see it this Saturday night at 7:30. As well as next Friday and Saturday at 7:30 and July 24th at 2:30. That's Cinderella.
Some fun theater coming up at the Phoenix Theater with a play called With a Bang. And I just love this idea. It's a graphic novel inspired play, and it's a battle between an angel, a 6-foot assassin from hell. There's a reluctant heroine, and she's got to write a book before the world ends in 4 hours, that sort of thing. Very much an absurd comic look at a woman's life before it falls apart. Should be a ton of fun With a Bang at the Phoenix Theater. It's open now, and it runs through August 14th.
Travis, this event has you and me written all over it. It is a fundraiser for Beer Can Raft.
Awesome.
Beer Can Raft is a play by Lou Harry. It's an indie fringe production. And Karen Irwin's directing. And so this Saturday night at Birdie's Bar and Grill, 6 o'clock cover charge, what are you going to do? You're going to drink beer and save your empty cans, because they need to build an actual beer can raft. You'll enjoy music by Tim Brickley, Karen Irwin, Grand National Champions, Tuesday Tornado, and more. And they're going to raffle off rides on the beer can raft once it's completed.
Very fun.
6 to midnight this Saturday night.
Hey, last thing I want to just let people know about is that the Tarkington Theater, which is part of the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel, is opening in July with a bunch of free July previews. And most of these, you do need to reserve tickets, though they are free. You can get more information at thecenterforperformingarts.org, but it includes Everett Green is singing up there, as well as Gregory Hancock Dance Theater, Heartland Moving Pictures, they're doing a screening, International Violin Competition. There's also a Kids Day and an open house. all sorts of fun stuff that is free, but you need to make your reservations. CenterForPerformingArts.org.
Speaking of things on the north side, Carmel Community Players is presenting Indie Klez. They're doing part of a world music series. That's a concert by the Indie Klezmer Band called Indie Klez. It's Friday, July 29th at 8 o'clock. It'll be at the Carmel Community Playhouse at Clay Terrace. Go to carmelplayers.org and look on their website for more information about Indie Klez, danceable
good.
Music.
Sharon will be back next week with more things to do on
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Jim Walker is a writer, a nonprofit director, an artist, a community organizer, and a creative entrepreneur. Travis DiNicola spoke with him about his current photography show at Waglaku's Studio and Garage, as well as his work with Big Car, the 48-hour film project, Second Story, and the Service Center for Contemporary Culture and Community.
You know, one of the things I really like about having you on the show is it's kind of like I get to record like 4 interviews in one session because there's always lots of stuff to talk about with you.
Sure.
And there is a lot. Once again, a lot of things you got going on in the next month and a half, both yourself and with the organizations you're involved with. But let's start with the show that actually has already opened by the time this is being aired at Waglaku's Studio and Garage Space. Overlooks is the title. Tell me about this.
Wug and I kind of got to be friends through the internet, basically. We hadn't ever met in person until, a couple months ago. But he had kind of been my friend on Facebook, and one of the things I like to do is take pictures with my iPhone and post them. I take pictures of all kinds of different things, unusual things, and things that I notice. And, I've been a photographer since I was a kid.
Sure.
And I think that the availability of uploading pictures to a pretty good size audience has been kind of fun for me with the way you could just take it and then upload it. And so he started to kind of follow those and asked me to do a show of those photos or photos like those. And I have some others that are kind of like them that I took with a regular camera too.
So not all with an iPhone.
But the majority of the ones that he picked were with the iPhone. And so he went through all the photos that I've uploaded and picked out a whole bunch to have in the show. And we ended up narrowing it down to ones that were more minimalist and a lot of lines and angles, and the composition was what he liked.
Yeah,
and
almost very abstracted just from what I've seen so far. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of where that came from.
Now, when you're doing something like that, I mean, so you're... But these are photos that are, in a sense, they're sort of like made for the iPhone, but then you're printing them out, and how does that work? I mean, because they change just by not being on a phone anymore.
Sure. I mean, one of the ideas was to show them on an iPhone. Mm-hmm. So that might be something I do later. And that would be more like something I could do at Big Car where it's a nonprofit, and if we don't sell anything or, it isn't even possible to buy it when it's sitting on the internet.
Right.
Wug space is a more of a commercial space, and so I like the challenge of presenting them in a frame and kind of taking them out of that off the internet context and printing them out and getting them on on the wall. And I think it's interesting that way too.
So, about how big are these?
They're 11x14 and 11x17 are the sizes that we're doing. And there's also one that's two of them that are larger. That fit in this, the way he has it set up. He has two windows that look into the small gallery that he has.
Yeah.
And so this is going in between those windows. So it's 20 some inches wide. So there are two big ones. And the rest of them are more in that size.
Now, I do want to mention Waglaku's Studio and Garage Space is a gallery that's located in the Circle City Industrial Complex, which is just off of It's this large building that's off of Brookside, which is really just off of 10th and sort of where Mass Avenue turns up and goes by the Monon and then cuts around. It's a little bit of a tricky space to find the first time you're there, but it's a really cool space because not only do you got Wug's awesome gallery space in there, but there's a number of other there's a glass blowing place, there's a couple of other artists who have studios and galleries, and they do, you know, First Fridays and regular things. It's kind of becoming an interesting new alternative art space in town, I think.
Yeah. And I think I hear that it's expanding too, and you know, more artists are going to be going in there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some great stuff worth checking out. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to find it online, it's Wug, W-U-G, Laku, L-A-K-U, Studio and Garage. If you need to search that and get directions. So the show that you've got at Wug's, again, Overlooks, Photos by Jim Walker, is up through July 30th.
Right.
And so you've got that going on right now. But you've also got a lot of other stuff going on. You mentioned Big Car, which is the not-for-profit that has a gallery space but also does a lot of other things based out of Fountain Square. Tell me what's coming up with Big Car.
Well, this month we are launching, we produced the 48-hour film project, and we've been doing that for a few years. It launches out of Fountain Square down in Imoka, is where we start it.
Now, this is a project where essentially you have like sort of teams of filmmakers. There's like a couple things that everyone has to use, right? Either like objects or words or phrases.
Yeah, like a prop and a phrase that is drawn, and everybody has to include that. You randomly receive a genre, so you don't know if you're going to do a Western or a comedy or a drama or a horror
science fiction.
There are a whole bunch of them. And everybody draws their genre. They get this prop and line of dialogue they have to work into the film, and that makes it clear that it was made during this weekend.
Right. And so they can't do it ahead of time.
Right.
No,
and then
predicting.
They go out and they make the movie and come back in 48 hours and turn it in ready to go. So, and then that happens on the 29th, and then we screen these all on the 6th of August at the Toby at the IMA. And we've had that, it's worked that way the last 2 years, and it's been very successful with lots of people coming out, and such a great venue.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So it's a big party that night, and it actually, you know, with the way we have to do it, we had more than 30 teams last year, so we had three different separate screenings of more than 10 films.
Now, I've seen a couple of the films. Most of these, I mean, they're short films. We're talking like, you know, 5 minutes or so, maybe, you know, a little bit longer. The people who are making them, you know, who are they? I mean, it's a mix of people, you know, amateurs, professionals. I mean, who comes
really,
out and does this?
Yeah, it's a really broad mixture. Some are have been teams from your professional shops in town that do commercials. Commercials, documentaries, that kind of thing. They'll put their team together and they'll go do a very professional looking movie. We have others where the emphasis may be more on the story or the idea, and they're shooting it with consumer equipment and just editing it on their computer. And they just did it for fun. And we've had some teams that kind of got together and didn't know each other that well, and they just, you know, kind of bonded together during this experience and had a lot of fun, and you could tell. And their movie might not have been as slick as the others, but you know, they're back to do it again because they had so much fun.
And you're still taking applications for teams, right?
Yeah, people can apply right up until the 29th.
Okay. And so there's, I mean, other than just like saying, hey, I want to do this, do they have to, is there a fee or is there anything like
that?
Yeah,
there's a fee. I think that when you get closer, it goes up. The rate at the end is $175 for a team. And, you know, what they end up getting is a lot of exposure.
Yeah.
You know, people will go and invest all kinds of money in a movie and then really want to get it out there, and it's a challenge. This gives you an instant audience that you'll have at the Toby, and then there are ways for them to distribute it also online and through the 48-hour film project. And the winning teams advance on to other competitions with even larger audiences that can see their work, and also they can receive prizes and stuff as they move on up the levels.
Cool. And again, just to be clear, the 48 hours, they get the materials and the concept and the words they have to use, and then they shoot it and edit it, and I mean, everything's done in that 48 hours?
Everything's done in that 48
so
hours.
So when they, at 48 hours, they turn it in and it's done in hands
it's
off.
It's rendered, put on a DVD, however they turn it in. And this is all based, this is an international competition.
Okay.
So we're just producing the local,
Version
Indianapolis
of
version of it. And it happens in cities all over the world. And even, It's a really great thing for people to be connected to. And, we've really enjoyed being part of it.
Awesome. Now, you've also got in August an opening for First Friday at Big Car. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, we're doing a show with one of the members of our group, Nathan Monk,
mm-hmm.
and he's working on audio, video, different prints of circuit bent, and he does circuit bent sound, but he also does things where he takes where digital files kind of get messed up
mm-hmm.
and then pixelated, and so he likes that kind of stuff, and so he's using that in his images too. So the whole thing is called Get Bent. So he's doing
Get Bent. Okay.
Yeah. So he's bending sound and he's images, both with these sort of this where, you know, like if you're watching a basketball game on a mm-hmm. satellite. Sometimes it'll do that thing when it freezes.
Sure.
And it has this weird pixelated image.
Yeah.
He's kind of working with that and manipulating that to make
huh.
images and also sound and video. So that's what his show is. It's a combination of these kind of bent digital things.
Okay. And again, Big Car is located down in Fountain Square. But you've also got, I think, one of the coolest new projects going on in town is the work that you're doing with the service center, which is a little bit tricky to describe, but basically out in the Lafayette Square area, and I got to go out there a little bit ago to sort of check it out. It's an old Firestone garage, oil change center, whatever,
yep.
that you guys have basically appropriated, been given, and there's everything now there's a community garden you're working on, and eventually there'll be, you know, sort of public space for people to meet and use. There's a need out there. I mean, I know we were chatting about this before. There's really no community center or library or public space out in that general area. And you're sort of creating that, but it's also a lot of other things too.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a fair way to describe
it? Yeah. I mean, the way we're looking at it is it's a creativity-based community center. So a lot of community centers are based on social services.
Yeah.
And those are great and very important. We're not really coming from that area as an organization that's, you know, very interested in helping communities and helping the city improve. But our background is in art and creativity and education.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't feel like the social services stuff is our place. But we want to support those kind of groups. And if they want to come
sure.
in and work from within this space that we've been able to get, that'd be fine with us. But it's kind of a creativity center.
Mm-hmm.
And we really feel that creativity is a good way for our kids and adults to get to a better quality of life and and it's just something everybody deserves to be able to have fun, be part of a creative, a space
yeah.
where they can create and enjoy creativity by others.
Well, it's a very cool space. I know you've got some interesting things coming up in August, specifically from August 10th to 13th. You've got some events going on there. Tell me about that.
Yeah, and starting on Wednesday the 10th of August, we're partnering with Asthmatic Kitty Records, and Michael Kaufman is putting on this event called Outsound with us.
And Asthmatic Kitty is a great label that has a local base, but they're an international music label.
Right.
Awesome guys.
And they're bringing in different acts that are going to play at our space on Wednesday and Friday, and at the IMA on Thursday night at the Toby again.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's experimental music. And we're going to have art connected to that, video art from artists from all over who will be. And we're going to activate this big garage space with some sculptures and some things that we're working on. We're working on some ideas with a couple artists to do inflatables, you know, like you have outside in front of the car lot.
Sure,
but
like
something
the,
different.
The human figures that sort of dance
yeah.
around and stuff.
But making
yeah.
different inflatables like that would be in this big space that we have.
Okay.
And doing things with video and light.
Cool. Now the space, to be clear, it's in sort of the parking lot, kind of the, I guess it would be the southwest corner of the mall up there,
yeah.
Just a little bit north of Don's Guns.
It's in front of Shoppers World, which used to be JCPenney's.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this was originally the JCPenney Automotive back
okay.
a long time ago. JCPenney even had
mm-hmm.
one, And then it turned into a Firestone and mm-hmm. closed a few years ago and was sitting empty when we... the mall has donated the space to us to use.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it really is. And so it's right there in a great prime spot that you see when you get past 38th Street on Lafayette Road.
Okay. Now, at this point, I mean, you have special events that are coming up. And again, I'm sorry, August 10th through the 12th is when you've got some stuff coming up. It's not open all the time yet. The service center is not open like on a regular basis yet. Is that correct?
In August, that'll start to have its hours. So we were kind of connecting it to when school starts.
Okay.
And the plan is for it to be open Wednesdays through Saturdays with regular hours. So not Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday.
Awesome.
But regular hours, probably afternoon and early evenings.
Okay.
And we just want it to be a place where people can hang out, Wi-Fi out there, computers out there for people to use. But all of it will be connected to creative things. So if people are going to be out there and use the computers, then we're going to have them to ask them to participate in projects. So we'll have writing. We may have writing projects where we are gathering stories from people and we want them to contribute, or we might record their stories, or we might have them participate in a collaborative drawing project.
Mm-hmm.
But people who come in there are going to be able to hang out and relax. It's not going to be like we're put them to work all the
yeah,
time.
Right.
But we're going to ask them to contribute if they're going to be in the space.
Sure.
And we really see it as a good mixture of people who'd be in there from all kinds of backgrounds, and it'll be a nice way to kind of show how there's such a collage of people in Indianapolis, and especially over there on the west side, which is a very, very diverse area.
Absolutely. Hey, real quick, just to sort of recap here, Jim, you've got the Overlooks show of your photographs at Wuglacoose Space. That runs through July 30th. His space is open on Wednesdays and Saturdays to check out that gallery space. End of the month, 48-hour video project. The next First Friday, which is coming up, I believe, on August 5th.
Yes.
And you've got an opening of the show down at Big Car in Fountain Square.
Mm-hmm.
And then out at the Service Center, some events going on August 10th through the 12th.
Travis DiNicola with community artist Jim Walker. You can see his photographs at Wuglacoose Studio and Gallery, located off 10th and Mass Ave in the Circle City Industrial Complex. If you missed the opening night a few weeks ago, there is a second chance reception starting at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, July 20th, with Jim giving an artist talk at 7 p.m. Visit WLSANDG.com, WLSANDG.com, or bigcar.org for more information. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4, when I'll find out about a visual art exhibit that young audiences artists are putting on next month.
I'll find out about Nat Evans' site-specific music installation.
And I'll get a look at the ancient Nigerian art exhibit at the IMA. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting Summer at the Palladium now through August. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.